The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning on kind of a gray and drizzly Thursday morning. It's Thursday, April 3rd here in the studio. We're live and local this morning on Morning Drive. And happy to say that I have Alan Harris here this morning. He's the CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Berkshire Money Management. Couldn't be a more appropriate day to have Alan on the show to shed some light on what is certainly plastered all over the news today, which is the tariffs that have been put on pretty much every country in the world from the United States, what our president has deemed Liberation Day yesterday. But that is sending shockwaves through the financial markets all over the world, Asia, Europe, and now when the U.S. opens at 9:30. So we will have a great conversation, I think, with Alan talking about tariffs, maybe some historical perspective on that, what they may do to the markets, and the kinds of things that maybe you ought to think about with your own personal finances as well. It's going to be a great show to stick around for, and we appreciate him coming in on such an appropriate day for that. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us for the rest of today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, cloudy. Showers, mainly this morning. Night is cool with highs in the mid-60s. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 80%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows in the lower 40s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Friday, partly sunny. Highs in the upper 50s. Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, so we're definitely going to be getting some more rain, but it's going to be warm today. It's in the 60s, and I did hear it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster over the next few days. Mostly goes back and forth between clear and raining, and, you know, it is April after all, so that is kind of what we get this time of the year. We're used to that. I saw a great meme or a cartoon the other day that said, when do you think spring will arrive? And the person answers, I don't know, I'm from Massachusetts, and then the other person just gives him a big hug. That's what we expect here. So spring will be here, just not today, right? All right. Welcome again to the show, Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM and also on 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Welcome to all of our listeners this morning on the station. And Alan Harris, good morning and welcome to you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Always good to talk. Just two guys talking about money here this morning on Morning Drive. As it turns out, we kind of picked the right day. It wasn't like we talked about this yesterday. We actually had this date lined up for a while. But here we are, the day after April 2nd. And apparently this doesn't seem to be a fake event. This is something that is being placed all the tariffs on various different countries throughout the world. Give us a perspective, if you can, about why a government might put tariffs and use that as a strategy, either for trade or for fiscal policy. What's a good thing about tariffs?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. You know, for your listeners who aren't in tune, if you don't mind, I'll just take one step back and kind of explain a little bit what did happen. So in President Trump's first term, he used tariffs broadly to go ahead and raise revenue for the U.S. Treasury, which could be spent pretty much however it can be spent to help American citizens, which is, a plus. And being going through his campaign, he said he was going to use tariffs again. Tariffs is the most beautiful word he ever heard, that sort of thing. And implementing tariffs typically are an act of Congress.
Right.
But there's some measures that can be taken if you declare emergencies, national emergencies. And right. so
those were laws that Congress passed over the last 50 or 60 years that gave the president those powers, right, to say under a certain circumstance that the president could declare an emergency and then do this kind of work. Otherwise, it would be completely in Congress's ballpark.
Correct. And initially, the emergency narrative was applied to Canada and Mexico with fentanyl being shipped over the border, saying we're going to apply tariffs on your countries if you don't protect the U.S. from having this deadly drug being shipped in. The narrative of emergency became larger and it became an economic emergency. And so it can be applied through these emergency measures, but have not been coded into the tax code. And in the first term, President Trump levied something like an additional $380 billion of tariffs on foreign countries, primarily China. President Biden actually kept those and added another $18 billion. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of economic things can happen, but you need to have other variables around to sort of push the effect one way or another. And the economy was doing well enough and everything else was doing well enough for coming out of COVID and a ton of stimulus was in there. There wasn't a painful thing for the U.S. economy relative to everything else that was going on. It did, according to...
In other words, the economy was strong at the time, and up until, you know, this beginning of this year, the economy had continued to be strong, had shown all signals of strength. So if you're placing tariffs on products coming into the United States, of course, as we know, those tariffs are ultimately paid by U.S. consumers. So it is, in essence, a national sales tax.
And you're going right where I was going to go. So the Peterson Institute back in Trump's first term and Biden's term suggested that it was about a $1,300 additional price per household. And tariffs will increase prices in the U.S. And I'll talk about that in a second. And yes, I'll get back to your question. I promise you. It's not... This is semantics, I know. It's not technically inflation because it's a one-time price adjustment up, but it's still rising prices.
Yeah.
The way it happens, the way it ends up being... so I've talked to lots of people who are both Democrats and Republicans saying things about tariffs, and there's some misconceptions about them. One of them is that it's foreigners who are paying the tax to help the U.S. raise money. But it's not foreigners who pay the tax. It's the U.S. companies who are shipping goods in from foreign countries. They, those companies, they, the thought now is that they will either, the U.S. companies, will either buy domestically or start building domestically, helping the U.S. manufacturing base. The price part of it, though, is that if the goods and services are brought in from the foreign countries, it's a higher price. And even if it is bought domestically, it's a higher price that they're going to be paying than they were before. That's the reason why they were shopping internationally, because it was a cheaper price.
Sure.
The company now has to either absorb the hit on margin, in which case sometimes these smaller margin firms will literally make no money or lose money, or they have to pass it on to the consumer. So that's exactly what I was going here. The imports, the tariffs on imported goods and services will be an increased price to the U.S. consumer. Now, embedded in there somewhere was a bit of an answer to your question about why the U.S. would do that. And tariffs are not a new thing. They've been around really before Social Security, before the income tax. It's a, you know, it's an 1800 remnant. You know, it's been around for a long time.
It was actually the way that the country was funded for many, many years up until that point. Right, a majority of the money the U.S. government took in before there was an income tax came from tariffs, which essentially is another way to tax.
Yep, and I'm going to be directionally correct, but not specific on the timing because I don't remember the timing. But something like around, you know, World War II is where you saw the biggest shift away from tariffs and into income tax. Actually, World War I, perhaps. I'm sorry.
Well, certainly, and there was a push to put in tariffs at the end of the 1920s, beginning of the Great Depression, right? The Smoot-Hawley Act, which was a congressional act that was meant to, I don't know exactly what the thought process was back then, but it actually historically was blamed for making the Depression worse at that time.
Yeah, I mean, the Depression might have occurred anyways, but Smoot-Hawley initiated under Hoover late 1920s.
Yeah.
What it did is essentially what we're all afraid of right now, which is the U.S. said, hey, we're going to do all these tariffs. And what happened is the other countries said, we're going to go ahead and trade with our non-American friends. And they created trading blocks that excluded the U.S.
Mm.
And so the muscle flexing of Hoover ended up backfiring and pushing an already rocky economy into the Great Depression.
Mm.
And would you know, there were already economic issues back then anyways, but that wasn't helpful to
right.
go ahead and have your economic friends say, we're not going to share with you, we're not going to trade with you. And we've already seen Canada and members of the European Union begin conversations about that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, great concern for a lot of us, including myself, that this flexing of the tariffs will lead to isolating U.S. from trade at all.
Yeah, and trade in general, since World War II, let's say, it's hard to argue that that did not benefit the United States over these last 70 to 80 years, right? The fact that we were able to build up trading partners around the world and, you know, yes, manufacturing has left a lot of, you know, the glory days of being here in the United States. But then again, the service industry and the knowledge industry, the creative industry, all those things have grown up here in this country. And that's been our real strength, where the manufacturing has moved to the lower paid labor markets overseas, right? That's generally been the model of the way it's gone.
Yeah, and so I'm going to answer that by answering your other question, which is, you know, what is the benefit to the U.S. for
sure.
doing this?
Yep.
There are estimates that these tariffs imposed, and we can get a little specific on any of them if you want to, even if it's just for example's sake, will increase revenue for the U.S. Treasury about $600 billion per year.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think that's wrong, because that is the tax applied to imported goods as they stand now.
Yeah.
Two things will shift. One is, if you increase the tariffs, fewer things are going to be imported over, and they're going to shift domestically. Again, to still have the problem of the margins and prices being passed on to consumers. And also, it'll slow economic growth. So the taxes that you would have received otherwise will not be there, and it could increase layoffs.
Mm.
And so the payroll taxes wouldn't have collected there either. So, you know, this is an arbitrary number, directionally correct. Mm-hmm. Instead of $600 billion, it's $300 billion
yeah.
or something like that. And going back to manufacturing and it being lower cost elsewhere, you know, for example, if the intention is to go ahead and, number one, raise that revenue for the U.S., but number two, drive manufacturing back to the U.S., I'm not sure that's going to happen, because this is an emergency measure which allows for no certainty for planning.
Mm-hmm.
So if a company, for example, wanted to say, I'm going to move my manufacturing from Mexico to the U.S. because in the long term I want to avoid these tariffs, well, they might just say in 3 and 4 years it could just simply go away, because there'll
right.
be a new president. It's not coded into the tax system. And the pain for a car manufacturer to go from $6 an hour for labor in Mexico to $70 if you're a union worker for one of the big three,
mm-hmm.
not Tesla, they're not unionized,
yeah.
and that would be one of the you know top four, I guess.
Yeah,
you shift from $6 an hour to $70 an hour, the manufacturers will probably just say, like, well, you know, we'll just hold on. Like, if it'll take us 3 or 4 years anyways to build, to refab, to hire, to train. And by the time we really get going and running, we're going to have a new president, and we can't be sure this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons you're really seeing the stock market get crushed today, and has been down over the last month and a half-ish, ish, is because there's a lack of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And without that certainty, you don't know whether you should build that plant in the U.S.
Yeah.
If this is all going to go away in a week.
Well, because manufacturing doesn't just start the moment you snap your fingers, right? It takes planning. It takes decision-making, as you said. You're going to be making those decisions on whether you can predict that something is going to be the case by the time the plant gets up and running and starts churning out the material. You have to know all those things. And if you don't have that predictable environment, you're probably going to do exactly what you said, which is hold on, just wait it out, see what happens. Try to endure whatever it is that comes through. And, you know, you mentioned the auto industry, and that's a particularly, I guess, complicated one these days because I think there was a time when we in America thought, well, there were American cars and there were Japanese cars and there were German cars and obviously others throughout the world. But, you know, you could divide those into categories and say, well, I'm going to buy an American car. And since that time, it's become much more complicated, right? Because there are parts coming from all different parts of the world, and the cars might be assembled here, but they might be designed somewhere else. Or, you know, the corporate profits might be going to a different company, but all the workers and all the benefits of making that car are here in the United States. So it's much harder to nail down, you know, what you're doing if you're saying, well, let's buy an American car. Is my Toyota truck an American car? It probably is. You know, mostly.
So I
don't know where the benefit is there to putting extra costs on the, let's say, the parts that might cross the border three or four times in terms of materials and then design and then manufacture and then assembly, right?
This has been a problem for a while, and there's been a couple of ways around the pain of measuring things like that. So as an example, there is an agreement between Mexico, Canada, and America where if they have products that go back and forth with one another for car manufacturing, there's just not a tariff applied to that so long as it's getting, you know, there are pieces that are sort of put together.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have an engine, you've got lots of different pieces of the engine, and a lot of them come from different countries.
Yeah.
So because of the complexities of measuring the value added to each component to, for example, an engine, and the just outright dollar price of their component, and then you have the labor of it. They just said, okay, we're just going to waive this. We're going to say no application of tariffs on this.
Mm.
And then there's other complications in terms of like, wow, it's just really painful for us to go ahead and tariff all these things that are like $3, $5, $10. So, you know, there's going to be a de minimis sort of thing. And that's why companies, for example, like Shein, which is a Chinese manufacturer and distributor, actually they're more of a logistics company really than a manufacturer, can bring in a lot of cheap goods, cheap and inexpensive, really, over to the U.S.
Yeah.
because they fly under the radar of that de minimis. But this new tariff system is not going to allow the cheaper goods, so they'll be, you know, they're going to have no margin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. So what happened yesterday? We gave a big backstory. So
right.
Yesterday at 4 o'clock. After much consternation from myself and the rest of the world about what the new tariff regime is going to be, President Trump went to the Rose Garden and announced what was going to happen. And he'd been talking about reciprocal tariffs, which, you know, theoretically is okay. Mm. And we talked about earlier on about transition from tariff to income tax and tariff stay on.
Yeah.
And really, there's no perfect way for the government to increase to collect taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But what we all generally want is to know how it's going to happen
mm-hmm.
and to have consistency in it.
And a reciprocal tariff is a tariff that we are placing on a country ostensibly because we feel like they have either placed a tariff on us, or it seems like also it's being interpreted as, well, we have a trade imbalance with this country. So that means that we're buying more from them than they are for us. So therefore, we're going to slap a tariff on them to even that balance off. Is that the thought process?
Yeah. So let's talk about China specifically, because that's just the one that comes up in the news the most and the narrative the most. So the way to think about it is, let's think about tariff rates. And there's different tariff rates for different products, and then different products can be a different amount. So if China's importing, you know, cheap clothes to us, mm-hmm. and it's 2% of all the goods that are coming over, that's different than cobalt, which is, you know, 40% of everything's being shipped over. That's not an accurate number. I'm just making things up. The point being that you can have different rates and the different volumes on things. So a lot of times what you'll do is take a weighted average and saying, here's of all the goods that are being imported over, and you apply that tariff per product on volume, you come up with a weighted average. And the weighted average for China is, this is directionally correct, I don't have the specific on it, but 25-ish%, something like that. Well, interestingly, yesterday during the Rose Garden announcement, President Trump had this big list of all the tariff rates that were being applied by foreign countries to us, mm-hmm. and he purported as saying, we're going to have a kinder reciprocal, saying, so if, for example, China had a rate of 25%, we'd say 20%. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, the rates that was displayed were, I'm sorry, just disingenuous. What they did is this weird math. People at home, don't follow it, but I'll give it to you anyways. So, for example, the trade deficit with China is about $285 billion. The total amount of volume of goods being shipped over to us is something like $480 billion. I forget what it is precisely, but it can't, whatever the number is, the numerator of the trade deficit divided by the denominator of the volume, they simply just took the percentage of that, said 67%, and said that the tariff rate is 67%. The tariff rate's not 67%. There's just some made-up number. Mm. And the way I heard someone describe it this morning, which I thought was good, is it's like a kindergartner approach to this. It just makes no sense to say that's what the tariff rate is. And
well,
so,
it does make you think, is there really a good thought process behind any of this, or is it just a very simplistic approach to a very complex problem?
I don't. So here's the conversation that everyone's having is, we don't know if it's a simple approach to a complex problem, or it's all intended to go ahead and be part of a broader negotiation scheme. Mm. I'm hoping it's a broader negotiation scheme, just because I hate to think anyone's this bad at economic policy.
Well, that's the 3D chess argument, right?
Yeah,
Someone knows way more than we know about it, and don't worry, they're playing 3D chess. So they've got this move, five, six moves out. They know what they're doing.
I'm hoping
I don't know
they
about
are.
Well,
I'm hoping they are. So I have great admiration and respect for the U.S. Treasury, Scott Bessent. Hmm. He's just super bright, super smart. And Howard Lutnick, although sort of bold and in your face, he knows what he's doing too. I've got to think that they are just biting their tongue, thinking this is awful. I don't want to do this, but okay, you've got a plan. I'm going to follow the plan. And the plan is that 3D chess. Because I don't. Maybe I just don't want to believe. Maybe it's a combination of naivete and hopefulness, saying that these two guys are saying, like, don't do this. This is wrong. This is going to hurt the U.S. Oh, and by the way,
and at some point they may get to a point where they can't tolerate it anymore. Right, that does happen when bad policies are instituted and good people go down those roads and then realize they get to that breaking point and they say, okay, I'm off the boat now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done.
So, I mean, if we got to the other end of whatever reshaping of the economy that we were generating more tariffs taxes from tariffs than income tax, that'd be fine. It would be... It would fall in the category of if it's not broke, don't fix it, perhaps. And in business, I don't necessarily subscribe to that, because sometimes you do want to break things to improve things. Mm. But this would be a shift that wouldn't really necessarily have an improvement. It just wouldn't matter so much on the other side of things. Because what's the end game, really? If the end game is to bring manufacturing back to the U.S., do you really want to spend all your time and effort building up industries of low profit margin, lower paying jobs, when you as a nation are the most innovative on the planet and have majorly high profit margin, high paying jobs?
Right.
it doesn't seem like, if your end goal is improve manufacturing, like it just doesn't, it seems very Don Quixote-ish. Like you're sitting atop the most innovative country in the world with the most innovative people in the world. Let's focus on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem too realistic. And the end game was kind of my question also, which was, okay, bringing manufacturing back seems to be the headline. There's obviously some geopolitical stuff in there as well, right? Things that, you know, militarily, economically versus other countries, you know, all those things I assume play in. But ultimately, though, we're also levying these taxes against our staunchest allies, Canada, Mexico, the European Union, all the trading partners that we've had traditionally who have, you know, the trade with them, from what I've seen, has been very beneficial, probably even more beneficial to the United States than it has been to the other countries over the years. And so what are we risking by you know, hurting those relationships? And those could be long term. You know, it's easy to break a relationship. It takes decades to build one up.
The risks are, there's probably two big ones. One is that we probably, the U.S., can withstand an economic shock better than others. So other countries are probably more at risk of being tipped into recession than us, which then affect us as well and kind of brings us down. And the other risk, which gets to the same end game, is them creating their own trading blocks. So again, Canada and European Union are already having conversations saying let's trade back and forth to each other and try to circumvent these tariffs as much as possible. And it forces exclusion on the U.S. and the rest of the
world. And isolation.
Yeah.
Right.
And so everybody gets hurt. I mean, you know, the term I keep hearing is fair trade, but is it fair if everybody suffers? I mean, I guess it's, you know, there's some equality there. They were all in pain, but is that the fair they were looking for?
Well, and the typical thing I've heard is that no one wins in a trade war. There is no winner, right? Long term. Just pain.
Yeah, I mean, even if at some point you get to a different equilibrium, it's an equilibrium at less GDP per capita. And yeah, I mean, going into the Rose Garden announcement, everybody kept asking me, what was going to happen. And so I would send them my favorite Rocky, the movie Rocky GIF with Clubber Lang saying, my prediction, pain. And that's pretty much what we got. Clubber Lang was right.
you gotta laugh at least a little bit to understand some of this stuff. And it's hard to understand. It's hard to know what decisions to make. And we'll talk about that in the second half of the program also about, what people should do, because this is something that affects all of us. There are a lot of people that will say that, unless it hits my doorstep, I'm not going to worry about what happens on a national scale, on a national level. And that's, sticking your head in the sand kind of mentality. I think a lot of people do subscribe to that, though, that they've got enough going on in their daily lives where they can't think about stuff like that. You know, it's just got to get worked out. I'll worry about it when it hits my doorstep.
Well, if you're an investor, hit your doorstep this morning.
Yeah, it certainly did. And 9:30 is coming quick here, folks. It's 8 o'clock now. And we'll all, I think, be watching what happens. And, you know, there's also no guarantee when you see the futures, S&P, Dow, NASDAQ futures that hit starting at 6 p.m. the night before and go overnight. And sometimes you wake up to quite the red ink, right? There's no guarantee that by 4 p.m. the next day, those numbers are going to sustain. You could have a wild ride on Wall Street today.
Oh, sure. That's not uncommon to see some reversal in either direction. But it could happen. It could continue for a while, this volatility, because of that lack of certainty. There's not a lot of clarity going, again, three-dimensional chess or just bad decisions.
Yeah.
We don't know which of the two it is. And if it is three-dimensional chess, how long does it play out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, part of this all goes to decisions that I think that Congress made over the last 50 or 60 years to cede some of that power to the president to be able to make those emergencies and put those tariffs on without really any further discussion or debate within multiple branches of government, which is the way that it was designed in the Constitution. So there may at some point be a reckoning for that. I don't know how long that might take, but we'll see how that works out. Coming to the top of the hour now with Alan Harris here on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. Alan Harris is the CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Berkshire Money Management. He's my guest this morning for the full hour, and we are going to take that top of the hour break that we always do, and we'll come right back and talk about what this means for you, what kinds of things you should be thinking about and doing today in a day where there's a certain amount of fiscal uncertainty and the quicksand is sort of moving quickly today. We'll see how that works out. We'll talk to Alan about that in the second half. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, UCPWMA.org/jobs.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
Pittsfield residents, have you heard about Code Red? It's the city's emergency alert program, and it keeps you informed on the latest updates and notifications, including but not limited to weather-related emergencies, road closures, and water main breaks. So stay connected and be informed. Text Pittsfield to 99411 to enroll, or visit cityofpittsfield.org to sign up.
Join Peter and Jessica to relive the magic of Beatlemania every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. for 5 decades to Fab Four, where Together or On Their Own has changed the world of music. Tune in to Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 FM, Tuesdays, 4 to 6 p.m.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM. Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, and 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Thanks to all of our listeners again for joining us this morning and listening to our great conversation with Alan Harris, CEO and Chief Investment Officer at Berkshire Money Management, on this day where there is a lot of financial news in the headlines, and you're waking up to that today, to a lot of red ink, probably also on your 401k and other investments you might have. So we're going to talk about the kinds of things, the steps you might want to take or not take, depending on your personal situation. We'll do that in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us for the rest of the day.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, cloudy. Showers, mainly this morning. Night is cool with highs in the mid-60s. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Chance of rain 80%. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows in the lower 40s. West wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Friday, partly sunny. Highs in the upper 50s.
Northwest wind 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Okay, so a little gusty, windy, a little rainy. It's going to be a bit of a roller coaster over the next few days. Going to be warm, going to be colder. Who knows? I don't do the weather. I just play the cut. All right, welcome back to the show. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Alan Harris from Berkshire Money Management joining me this morning. And before we get to the follow-up on what we were talking about at the end of the last half hour, you've got an event coming up, but we just want to talk about how beneficial that can be to some folks. It's called Retirement Rounds, 457 B's and Brews, and that's specifically for physicians. Just tell us a little bit about that, Alan.
Yeah, so most people who are in the nonprofit world are aware of 403Bs. It's eventually the nonprofit version of 401Ks. There's, for some employees in the nonprofit world, and Berkshire Health Systems, BMC, is a nonprofit, I'll explain it very simplistically. There's another layer to it. It's the 457 plans, and that is usually for a subset of the employees. In this case, it's oftentimes for the medical doctors and orthopedists. Mm. And so on April 8th, 4:30 to 6:30 at the Hot Plate Brewing Company, One School Street in Pittsfield, which I haven't been to yet. I've heard good things.
It's great.
Is it?
Yeah.
We're gonna be there to talk a little bit about the 457 plans. There's some really neat ways to. My job is really kind of interesting. Like, I can make someone a ton of money in the market, and they're just like, shrug, this is what you're supposed to do. You save them $1,000 in taxes. Like, you're great. You're fantastic. And so, I mean, 457 plan, if, you know, done right over time, you can save like, you know, six figures worth of tax savings. So, yeah, it's a pretty important conversation to have.
And I would imagine, too, that, you know, talk about busy people. I can't think of anyone more busy than physicians and orthopedists and people in that profession who, you know, they've got so much going on. And yet, to them, just like everyone else, investing and your personal financial situation, your retirement plans, all those things are very important to keep in mind. And it's so easy to forget about it, right? Just to set it and forget it or maybe not even think about it at all. So this is an important, and it's a free event, right? There's no charge to go to this particular event for these folks.
Correct. Yeah, it falls in the category. There's so many things in life, even outside of financial, where we know it's important, but it's not urgent. So you just never get to it without that nudge, without that push. So, and many times you don't even have these conversations with people, whether financial or otherwise, because you don't even know what to ask.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just nice to show up like you and say, you want to talk about this, so you tell me, because I don't know what to ask. Right. I don't know what's going on. Give me the information.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what this is.
Great. And, you know, on another day when you come in, we can do an entire program just on retirement plans, if you like. You know, 401k, what is the difference between that and, let's say, a 457b or a 403b, which a lot of nonprofits and teachers and people like that have, right? There's a great conversation that we can have about that.
I'd be happy to help your listeners with that.
Yeah. So let's do that at some point. But today, of course, the day after Liberation Day and all of the tariffs that are being put on other countries throughout the world, we've been talking about why you might do that as a country, and we kind of explored that a good amount in the first half.
I did want to touch upon one thing
though,
if I may.
Sure.
We kind of talked about that during the break. It's more of a myth. So actually, recently I wrote an article about myths for taxes and misconceptions, really, I guess, more so on the tariff side. And on the tariff side, one of the outcomes that people think it is supposed to be is that if you're raising taxes and you're collecting taxes on tariffs, then you can use it to, for example, extend the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act or cut taxes in other ways. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work that way. So, because this is an emergency measure, it gets scored differently. So when you come up with a tax plan, a tax proposal that has to get voted on, you have to have a matching offset. So if you say, I'm going to reduce this amount of collections, you either have to convince the voters in the Congressional Budget Office that it's going to be an increase in revenue, which it does not happen one for one.
If you're going to lower taxes, you're not going to bring more money in.
Yeah, that's a big myth. It doesn't happen that way. I'm a greedy capitalist. I'm going to tell you right off the bat. The math just does not check. Or you have to raise taxes some other way, raise collection some other way,
right.
Cut spending, which doesn't happen very often.
Right.
And so tariffs collected in this manner do not get scored as collection. So you can't use this to say, we just raised $600 billion, which, again, I said earlier on, I think that's a false estimate because you'll end up importing fewer things and there'll be some economic contraction.
Yeah.
So you don't raise that revenue
people
anyways.
People will be buying as much.
Yeah. But we'll say $600 billion just because that's what the White House is saying. You can't just say, I'm going to cut taxes collectively by $600 billion because the CBO doesn't have it in their coding that you can count that. So it cannot be used to lower taxes. So it's just one misconception that I've heard people talk
Interesting.
About.
Interesting.
Like, it's part of the game is to lower taxes later on. Like,
and I guess if you use this tariff regime in a way to block the American consumers from purchasing a lot more foreign goods and therefore try and shift them to purchase more American goods, it doesn't mean that American goods will be competitive per se, right? It just means that they'll be restricted from competition. So in a way, you could see American products go up in price because they won't really have to worry about competing against anyone else's price. It's actually exactly opposite of capitalism.
So the what has happened typically in so let me go back a little bit. When I wrote that article about misconceptions of tariffs and taxes, I wanted to come up with examples of hyperbolic threats of taxes. And I came up with so many of them that I had a limit to threats or applications of 100% tariffs. And I got like, I forget, 7, 8, 9, 10 examples. So I couldn't, the article had been too long if I actually reduced it a little bit. So the application and talks of these taxes are pretty big. And you've seen all sorts of different tariffs applied throughout the last century plus. And here's what happens or has happened. You don't typically see the rates of the domestic goods or services stay the same. Instead, what happens is they rise to match what the new tariff rate will be.
Right.
Now, you might say, you might want to walk down some exploration as to why that happens. Let's not get into it here. Just know that that's what has happened. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be that good. It can just be a correlated good. So one of the examples that gets brought up a lot is, and this is a domestic thing, it's just sort of, it's kind of connected though. In Trump's first term, he raised tariffs on washers, but not dryers.
Right.
The price of dryers increased similar amounts. No tariff on them, but because it was a connected good, it went up. And so you end up having prices rise more than you might expect from just the tariffs.
It's head shaking in some ways, just trying to wrap your head around it and say, you know, why does this happen and why are we almost, killing the goose that laid the golden egg in a lot of ways?
Well, I will say, and again, and I mentioned earlier on, great admiration for Scott Bessent, U.S. Treasury Secretary. I think Howard Lutnick knows what he's talking about as well. Weird personality, but smart guy.
I say a little on the ideological side.
He totally is.
Yeah.
Which is why, again, this is perhaps naivety or hopefulness on my part, but I'm thinking this is part of that three-dimensional chess where they've got to know this is a bad idea and it's going to be adjusted later. But then this morning, I'm like, I can't place 100% certainty on that because, for example, prior to this announcement, Israel said, hey, we'll just go to zero tariffs. Let's do it. It's a great idea. Get rid of them. And the White House said, no, we're going to still apply, I think it was 17% on you. So there had already been some attempted negotiation to go in and say, you know what? Yeah, let's get rid of them. And they didn't bite. The White House didn't bite.
Well, and a lot of moving parts. And, you know, we've been on the air for 45 minutes. Who knows what has happened since we've been on the air? We're only working with the information we had as of 7:30. But we'll see how the rest of today plays out. So and other people, listeners, will certainly be watching and listening to that as well. If you have a solid financial plan, maybe whether it's through Berkshire Money Management or whether you're doing it yourself or whether you have someone else. A day like this, I would imagine you get a lot of calls. People will the tenor of their voice on the other end of the phone might be a little more panicked than usual. They might be worried about what's going on. They might think that they need to take some action today to head off something that might be worse later on. I assume those are not necessarily great ideas to be in the moment thinking about changing your plans or completely reversing something you've already done. What do you usually tell people?
I've got some fun stuff on that. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you said is, you know, if you have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And our calls, actually, I'll speak about my business specifically just because I know it more, but I think this is true for other people like me. So I'll speak for a little bit for mm-hmm. them too, but not knowing specifically. But the amount of calls you get in regarding the market when days are down like this are actually fewer than it would have been 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of reasons. One is just client education over time mm-hmm. and the approach of not just being an investment house, but offering lots of other services, whether it's tax planning, tax loss harvesting, Social Security, Medicare, estate planning, all these mm. other things. So we end up having this more, I guess, I hate the term, but holistic approach to it. And another part of it is software. So again, speaking specifically for us, other people use different ways. There's a financial planning software that we use, and people can log into it. And we have this cool like play zone on it. So you can go in there and say, what if? What if the popular one nowadays is what if Social Security goes away? But you can also say, what if the market goes down 10%, 20%, 30%? And then built into the plan are what we call needs, wants, and wishes. And you can see your success rate. If the market goes down 20% and whatever, pick a number,
mm-hmm.
can you still accomplish all your needs, wants, and wishes? And maybe you're like, oh shoot, that wish of buying that, you know, that speedboat or whatever, you know, goes away, but I still can do all the things that I need and want to do.
Mm.
So a lot of people go into their software if they've had a full financial plan, and be like, oh, all right, I feel more at ease. Maybe I won't call in. When people do call in, it's understandable. There is a part of a brain called the amygdala.
Mm.
And the amygdala says, I don't like pain, do something about it.
Mm.
And oftentimes, just pushing a button that says sell something is a way to release that pain, get rid of that pain.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if people call up, two things happen. One is we work a little bit as a therapist, for lack of a better term, and kind of talk about the play zone and the financial plan and what we might see later on. For example, like a lot of the conversation, we're talking about fiscal policy being bad now. There's a lot of talk about financial cuts now, cuts coming up too, that conversation hasn't entered. And typically that is good for the market, if not necessarily anything else. Depends on the tax cuts. Or sometimes it's just enough insurance to say, let's go ahead and do something.
Mm.
And what we found is if someone is really having a hard time with the market, because let me back up a little bit.
Yeah.
When you talk to someone, you do want to talk to them about, hey, there's going to be volatility in the portfolio. Is that okay with you? And if not, we have to adjust it.
So that's risk tolerance,
risk
right?
Tolerance.
How much risk people think they can take.
And risk is a word for volatility,
How comfortable they are, right, taking risk.
And what we find is that people generally are very risk insensitive during a bull market. They say, I can handle whatever comes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get tested, and you're like, well, you know what? I'm going to change my mind a little bit.
Mm.
And so that's not a bad thing, but we have to recognize, okay, the amygdala is like flashing. We got to do something to take some of the pain away. And we now have a better real-time measurement of what you are comfortable with or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just sell off a couple percent of this, or they shift from this asset class to that asset class just enough so you know that we're going in the right direction.
Mm.
And we can understand this more over time. And why is that important? Because one of the things that the other financial advisors in our Berkshire Money Management does too is kind of protect people from making irrational decisions, emotional decisions. There's been lots of times people have come to us and they're in 100% cash because they sold out during COVID or they sold out during the 2022 crash and they just haven't got back. And they made the decision of selling out and never getting back in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the right thing to do at the time. And perhaps they sold out when things were down 10% and went down 20%. And they made the perfect move for that 10% decline, but then captured on the upside.
Yeah.
So part of what we want to do is make sure that we protect someone from getting out and not getting back in.
Mm-hmm.
So we can make small moves
and
partner with them and be like, all right, what's going to make you sleep better? And then we'll worry about helping to get back in later.
And it's also fair to say that it's almost impossible to perfectly time the market, right? Even the professionals get that wrong. Everyone maybe except Warren Buffett. But I think of the buy low and sell high. goes against your psychology, most people's psychology, where, you know, you're reacting the way you said when something happens. You feel perfectly comfortable during a bull run, you know, let it go, let it ride, you know, put all the chips there and let it ride because it feels so good. And that, you know, should be the moment where you might say, this might be a good time to cut some of those winners and put that in cash and wait for a moment for something really bad to happen so that then you can buy it at a lower point, right? That would be the perfect financial way to do it. It's just that not everybody reacts that way.
So, yeah, Warren Buffett, for those not in the know, is pretty much the most famed U.S. investor that's out there. And he's him and his former partner, who unfortunately passed away, Charlie Munger, used to have a lot of great economic investment quips. And I forget which of the two I should attribute this to, but, you know, buy when there's blood in the streets. So more often than not, at a time when the market's down, you probably want to be looking to buy than to sell.
Yeah. Economic financial crisis, for example. Some people did very well during that time when everybody was just trying to get out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But when there's a time now, like when the market's down 10%, you do want to wonder if the market's going to go down further and if it's going to tip in, the economy's going to tip into a recession, and that 10% becomes, you know, the times to generally try to raise cash, in my estimation, is if a turn down, a pullback is in sync with a recession, because a pullback in a recession typically is closer to 25-35%, and takes a year-ish.
Yeah.
And so you can make some moves to try and sidestep some of that. But you're right, you can't time a correction. Mm. There are no consistent, reliable tools to go ahead and step out of the way of those 5%, 10% moves. In a time like now, like one of the things you could do is actually be strategic about cutting a couple things. Like you might have some things in your portfolio that are trading at a loss. You bought it at one level, it's trading below that. You could, and if it's a taxable account, like a non-IRA, non-401k, you could sell that, get a tax deduction for the loss you had, reinvest it into a different investment. It can't be the same one until 31 days later. It's called the wash sale rule. But you can sell something now at a loss, take that loss and invest in something else. And you have a tactical tax move.
Yeah. Yep. Those are things that people can do. And we'll just throw a quick disclaimer out there, too, that, you know, we're not giving you specifically financial advice this morning. That's best that you make those decisions between you and your financial advisor. But we're certainly discussing the issues here today and all kinds of the different options that people have. And also to, you know, just a general feel for, you know, what, you know, people ought to be thinking about when a day like this comes, because in an economy like we have in the United States, days like this do come. Anybody who'd been around for a while had seen the dot-com bust and had seen the great financial recession of 2008. And, you know, that wasn't just 2008, really. It affected people for a long time. Let's talk about the concept of stagflation for a moment. And, of course, when you get to a recession, it's not just your stocks that go down. It also is a general decline in the economy, the growth of the economy, which also can mean layoffs. You might be, you know, your job might be at risk. And that changes everything, right? What did Ronald Reagan say? When your neighbor loses their job, it's a recession. But when you lose your job, it's a depression.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the kind of thing that we talk about. But something along the lines of what's going on today and the general economic, you know, I hate to even use the word malaise, right, because of that has its own political connections and connotations. But the idea that you could have stagnation in the economy and inflation in prices and those two things hitting at the same time is just a deadly combination for the economy.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's no – malaise is a good – let's use the word malaise, I guess, here. Because in replace of actual numbers, because there's stagflation is a thing, but there's not a – there's no definition in terms of what the inflation rate or spread needs to be or what the economy needs to be. So it's really kind of more conceptual. And the concept being, like you said, there's inflation – and maybe it's inflation at 3%, which is roughly what it is now, depending on what measure you want to look at. And the economy is just flatlining, or it's probably not negative, but it's pretty darn low. It's definitely below trend. Mm. And that happens for a period of time. If it happens just for a quarter or two, it's like, you know, it just happened for a quarter or two. But if it happens for a year and a half, like you've had a period of stagflation. And what you have then is very little capital expenditure, so fewer companies investing in expanding their exposure to plant property equipment. Mm. You have more resistance to hiring. You have less certainty about when that will increase. And so you end up having wages that don't go up quite as much, and which is actually can help inflation, but it's bad for the consumer.
Yeah.
And you have the stock market generally doing nothing or going down. Mm. So if you have the problem of inflation, you really kind of want the economy to go down a little bit. This is just math. Sorry, yeah. I'm not talking about what you really want. But if you want the math to work, you do want the economy to go down a little bit, because what it does is decrease demand and it controls inflation. But if you just have the economy kind of humming along on the positive side, even if low, you can't break that back of persistently higher inflation. Mm. So you're in this land where, like, all right, we can't get the economy going, but it feels really bad to crush inflation by making the economy go down. Yeah. So you end up, stagflation ends up being persistent longer than you'd expect it to.
And the last time we really had a bout of that was the decade of the 1970s, and people old enough to remember that. Some of our younger listeners may not remember what that felt like, but it was not great because, again, people had a difficult time finding employment. And at the same time, inflation, you know, even a mortgage was in the 12 to 15% range. And, you know, that was reflective of how much prices were also going up all the time. So it's definitely not a fun time.
It was so not great that the then chairman of the Federal Reserve Board is still lauded half a century later by putting the U.S. economy into recession to break stagflation.
Right.
Let me restate that. Yeah, so people understand. Volcker, right? Stagflation was seen as being such a scourge that we celebrated a man who pushed us into recession so we could break that. Recession was so much better than stagflation. Yeah.
And hopefully we're not there yet. And there isn't definite signs of that, you know, scourging the economy, if you will. But it is a potential threat.
There are different measures of inflation. So I'll just choose headline personal consumption expenditures, because that's what the Fed looks at. And for the last 10 months, it's been roughly 2.8%. Now, back in September, it dipped down to 2.1, and there was some improvement. But it's been about the same spot for about 10 months. But the economy's been great. Mm-hmm. But now we don't know if the economy is going to be great. So that's how come stagflation comes in. Inflation has remained sticky for a little while. So that's why people think about the Asian part of stagflation, I guess.
Yeah.
But now we have a challenging economy. So we're you know, do we root for the economy to do nothing, or do we root for the recession?
Yeah.
I don't think we want to root for the recession.
I don't think anybody wants to root for a recession, that's for sure. And today could be our inflection point. We'll see how that plays out. Many eyes today will be on the markets, and everyone will be, I think, watching that. If you're not, good luck to you, and maybe you're happier, that's it. Alan Harris, I want to say thanks again for being here today and shedding some light on this very interesting day in all of our finances and our economy. One more time on the big event, the retirement rounds for 57 B's and Brews that you've got on Tuesday, April 8th, 4:30 to 6:30 over at Hot Plate Brewing.
Yeah, to check that out, go to our website, berkshirem.com/brews, and you can check that out.
Yeah, and that's again aimed at physicians who invest in 457Bs. It's a free event that Berkshire Money Management is hosting, and you could pick up some pretty interesting and useful information at that event and have a brew at Hot Plate Brewing. So it couldn't hurt doing that, right?
No, not at all.
All right. Well, thanks again for being here today. Such a great time talking with you. As always, I think we'll follow up the next time that we do this and do a program just on retirement plans. I think that would be very interesting for people to hear. So,
looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again. And everybody out there, hope you have a good day on the roller coaster. And we'll be back again here tomorrow on Morning Drive with another live show. All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks.